the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show with me, Tim Fuel, here for another hour of non-league magic and wonderment, and joined by two of the most well-known managers in the history of the non-league game. First up, stalwart of the show, who couldn't even let a golf day get in the way of him appearing on last week's show. Welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, Mr. Dave Anderson.
Good morning it is, and you've pushed the ball out there with that introduction.
Oh, wow. you say good morning. It's raining outside, David.
Well, it's going to clear up in about an hour, so crack on.
and alongside Mr. Anderson, alongside myself, joining us, another former AFC Wimbledon manager, now chairman at Southern League Basingstoke Town. Welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, Mr. Terry Brown.
Good morning, Tim, and good morning, Dave. Yeah.
And it's great to have you back on, Terry. Obviously, we're going to be talking FA Trophy this week because that gets underway. But it's really to find out what's been going on in your life. As I say, you're chairman now. You to the dugout, and you're now up in the boardroom. Should we start with the FA Trophy this weekend? You know, you've got North Lee drawn at home in this extra preliminary round. There's only 28 ties in here, but you're having to play the game away. Set the scene. Why is that, Terry?
Well, as most people hopefully would know by now, we've been evicted from the Camrose site that we had. We'd been it for, I don't know, 80-odd years or whatever. It had a considerable amount of years to run, about 30-odd years to run on the covenant, of which obviously didn't mean a thing. Rafi Razak, the club's owner, decided he'd had enough of football and was pulling out. He basically, if you look at the ground, he won't have it that it was run into the ground. But if you go there now, you'll see the state it's in, and it certainly wasn't fit for football this year. So we were evicted. We had to move. I would like to say that the Sports England in particular have been fantastic with us in fighting our case. And sometimes the FA doesn't get any credit at all, and loads of panning everywhere. And they're behind us in trying to get a like-for-like replacement for the stadium, which might sound okay, but when you're dealing with property developers, it's anything but simple.
Yeah, so it's been a bad year, really, because also on that last day of the season, I know we're recording this down at Hayes and Yedding, and we were celebrating that we got our promotion and the fact that we were going to be coming to you and renew old acquaintances. And last day of the season, you end up falling into that mathematical probability that you'd maybe thought of but didn't think was going to happen. And you end up getting relegated down into Division One, and probably the whole life of anybody involved in a football club gets turned upside down. So I'd imagine this is probably one of the worst summers that you've had in football.
Yeah, incredibly disappointed for a fantastic, loyal fan base. You know, we're getting 250 people travelling up to Winchester, and desperately disappointing for them. I wouldn't really have thought we were going to get relegated. Did the relegation bearing the position we're in now make any difference? Well, we're bottom of the league we're in, so we would have been probably embarrassing in the league above. We're running on a tiny budget of £500 a week, and wow, it's not sufficient really to sustain football at any decent level. Our fans are putting various initiatives together and bringing in some more money to fund the budget. But it's not about our league position at the moment. We need to stay up. We need to keep our supporters engaged. But we really need to get into Winkelbury as soon as possible with a like-for-like club.
Yeah, Winkelbury is the Hampshire FA site. It's a great training facility you've got there, 3G pitch and everything like that, but it just needs to be brought up to scratch for ground grading. So I guess turnstiles, terracing, stands and that sort of thing. The thing that a lot of clubs, that they dread anyway, but you can't even get going until you've got that. So yeah, I'm thinking back to the cameras. It was getting tired. Yeah. But you also had all those other revenue streams. I remember the first time I ever went there, you had a big car park that there was parking on the day, so that, that was income coming in. There was the car wash that was there, and that was always busy on a Saturday.
As well.
There was a bookies on site as well. So suddenly, as well as you're having to pay to play away for your home games on a ground share, you've also lost all those other income streams. And your bar was always busy. There was always events going on, that sort of. So, as you say, you're relying on the fans now for initiatives, but do you need other people to get involved? Is that the way that the club's going to move forward?
Yeah, definitely. I'd first, of interest, note that Dave realised there was a bookies on there, which was obviously relevant. We also, to that, you know, to them six or seven things you named, we had an AstroTurf facility where our academy trained. Our academy education department was in the clubhouse. We're now having to pay for all of our academy boys to use the John Ward suite in Hampshire FA headquarters. We're having to pay for using the pitch, training on the pitch. We're having to pay for, you know, moving up to Winchester. There are no revenue streams except 151 season ticket holders who come to most of our games and are very loyal. If I want to get anything over to Raphael, our previous owner, it's we desperately need the money up front. I know you're stalling on the money for reasons of planning, so you get your planning agreed and then the money comes over. That's not possible. We can't get those things that you said, the terracing, the drainage, the seating capacity for a grade C ground grading. Sports England have said that they have to provide us with a like-for-like replacement. When you read the grade 3 grading, grade C grading, it's very grey. It's very grey around the clubhouse. Now, we want to be a real community clubhouse. We want to be a real asset to the people of Winkelbury and the people of Basingstoke. And we aren't going to be an eco-friendly community club. How can you be that without a clubhouse? Yeah. So how can you put anything on for the residents? How can you do anything? How can you even... Well, you can't even... What they're looking for us to do is put temporary in here, temporary clubhouse, temporary... That's not acceptable. Yeah. It's not a like-for-like replacement.
Well, as I say, we're recording this at Hayes and Yedin, and you've not had a recent walk round, and we'll do that after record, but you can hear that there's work going on in the background because we moved in here with the very basics.
Yeah.
And the problem is, once you're in, it's very difficult to get other bigger bits of the project. So we've got a temporary bar still. We've still got some temporary facilities. And all that needs money as well.
Yeah.
But all the money was taken just to get back here. And you haven't even got that at the moment. That's the... You've still got life in your eyes, Terry. You're still excited by football. You're still, you're still there. Look at some of the positives. You do have a great training facility there, so you are able to. Although it's costing, your academy seems to be booming.
Yeah, it's doing well.
We did reported on Martin Call, leaving by mutual consent as manager last week. It must have been hard because, I mean, there's fewer. There can't be many managers around, certainly at Step Four, that have got that sort of experience and knowledge that Martin came with.
And thank you for bringing that up because it gives me an opportunity to thank Martin. Martin's a friend of mine. I've worked closely with him at Aldershot. Probably the best technical coach I've ever worked with in my life. And he, talk about being overqualified, please give him a job somewhere in a big club, because he was trying to implement a way of playing, an academy way of playing, which was technical and total football, if you like, a bit like, you know, playing out from the back and everything. And he really didn't have the raw commodities to work with. He didn't have that talent pool to work with. And David would know better than anybody else. When you're talking about a budget of £500 a week, you're talking about expenses. We've loaned three boys in from two from Wimbledon and one from Forest Green. And we're basically paying their expenses. But even that's, you know, it costs a boy in Wimbledon £57 a time to come in on a train. Well, you know, there's not too many £57 go into £500 a week.
Yeah, and I think as well that you know that you, when Terry says it's difficult, you have absolutely no idea how difficult, because the buck sort of stops with the manager. So I understand Martin's situation. You're banging your head against the wall, and the one thing I wanted to come back to you about, Tel, was have they asked you to go into the dugout as an interim, if you like, and two, is there any way back into the dugout for you, or are you done with that stuff and have gone upstairs, which I couldn't believe anyway. But let's look at the first one first. Who will look after the side until you appoint someone?
That'll be Dan Brownlee, who is our assistant manager and is perfectly equipped to take over. He knows all the boys. He's worked with the boys. He's also been very, very successful at Hartley Whitney, where he guided them into two promotions into the league above us. So no qualms at all with passing that over to Dan. And we had a board meeting last night, and I think there's going to be some kind of announcement, hopefully later on today, to just explain that situation to our fans. And I think he'll be ideal. He'll be given license. I went into, first of all, sort of director of football with Jason when he was running it, and I soon found, just from a personal view, that, yeah, you can have meetings and that, but let the man manage, for heaven's sake.
Yeah.
You know, I pulled myself away from Jason and said, Jay, you do it, because I respect you as a manager, and hopefully you respect me. And we have different views of how the game should be played, and why would I want to inflict my views on, you know, the way I look at it, if I want to inflict my views, go and do the job. Go and do it. Take the flak. I don't want stomach ache on a Saturday morning. I don't want the worry of looking after a team and the various components of the youngsters nowadays and how they're offended rather more easily than they were when you and I played, Dave. We used to get a rollicking before the game.
Yeah,
during the game, half-time and after the game, even if you'd won.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that's right. That isn't. It's obviously
no, but it's off our age. Yeah. It's off our era. And you know, I fully agree with that. So basically, because I think some business Stoke supporters will be asking why Terry's got his phone on.
No, schoolboy error, I do appreciate. I've come all the way to London and I've let you down.
If you come to chairman and he forgets the rules of the dressing room.
Yeah, yeah.
Who was it, AFC Wimbledon? No, yeah. I'm only
certainly not.
But listen, in serious, some business Stoke supporters and football supporters in general would come to the conclusion, well, why doesn't Terry just look after it for a while? So that's your rhyme and reason. I understand the bit, because every football manager, of which you were for a long time and a successful one, you've just said the words that every football manager wants to hear from his chairman. So that comes from within. But for me, that's the rhyme and reason why you don't want to take a step back to look after, is that you're done with that side of it.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a bit reluctant to say definitely yes, in case there's a.
Don't worry, Dave.
In case that was Wimbledon.
In case there's another massive club, you know, that would. I was very lucky, Dave. Both of us were lucky to work with vehicles that could take you on. So, you know, I was at Hayes for 10 years, and to be fair, that I think that went as far as we could in the conference and finished third 1 year.
Yeah.
And now it's rebuilding itself up. It went to Aldershot, that obviously had the potential to go into the Football League. We just missed that.
Yeah.
Had the vehicle of Wimbledon, but you'd left a really good club, and you'd left.
That's in our agreement that you have to say
you'd
that.
Left
every
me
time.
The tools to work with, and I wouldn't mind betting that phone call's Willie Wordsworth, because I remember doing a chat on TV after a game, and he was in a pub somewhere ringing me up. That was the phone number. So it's probably Willie. But I think there's a lot of young, hungry managers out there. Would I like to do a director of football? at a club that had some money that you could help with a recruitment and you could just give advice on the side, not on a match day.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, anybody would love that.
Do you know what? You've given my answer in a different way. I've been asked a million times if I'm finished and do I miss it? And I said, if I could be a football manager till 5 to 3 and then at 5 o'clock, I would never retire.
Half two, Dave. I hated that half hour up to now.
That's true. But I feel exactly the same way. People don't understand what you go through, no matter how experienced you are. So I get that. But I also get in the statement that, whereas if you ask me, unless someone's going to drive in here with an articulated lorry full of money and go, I'll give you that if you do it, then, but you, there's something in there that's saying that never say never for the moment. And I know,
I certainly wouldn't volunteer to become a chairman of any club. Let me tell you that. Because
what's the difference?
Spending the money is a lot easier than bringing it in. And we're desperately looking while I'm out there for a main sponsor. And some of you builders that are building millions of houses in Basingstoke and building on the golf course and other community assets, put some money behind the best community club in Basingstoke, and we will be that if we're given an opportunity to build a clubhouse.
Well, to be fair, Tim, that would be if the builders were to give 1%
into a levy,
you'd have a team on the ground to sustain for years.
I was going to talk about the trophy and how, you know, is it important to the club to go on a trophy run? You're looking at this Saturday. Obviously, you're playing away, so I guess it'd be a shared loss probably on that front. But there is, 1,500 quid to the winners, 500 quid to the losers at this round, which, from what you've already said, is a massive amount of money for one game.
Yeah, it'll be a massive bonus for the club and also for the supporters. I keep feeling about the supporters because we've been knocked out of every cup and we're bottom of the league. We haven't won a game yet.
And Terry, sorry to interrupt you. How far is Winchester away from Basingstoke? Because it's not around the corner, is it?
It's about 20 miles. And again, I'd really like to thank the chairman and everybody involved at Winchester. Mm. They have been fantastic with us. They're not charging an astronomical amount, but it's impossible for us to make any money. I touched on earlier the fact that we've got 151 season ticket holders. They come and it's fantastic and they support and they make a noise, etc. But we're actually taking money on the gate. So I know that sounds a bit sort of double-edged sword, but it's like, well, how are we going to pay for it? Obviously, we have to pay for the ground and we have to pay for everything. We don't get any bar takings. As you pointed out earlier, Tim, we have no revenue streams.
But it's even the officials on a match day.
Yeah, 150 quid,
And how do you see it, Tel? And I know you've no crystal ball, but how do you see the next step? How do you see are we stuck now in this for what seems an eternity? Is there a way out of it?
Yeah, there's definitely a way out of it, David, and that is for Bazron and Rafael Razak to see the light and say, yes, we're not going to stop. You're not going to get your planning permission on the Camrose until we get a like-for-like replacement for the community club, and that includes a clubhouse. It's not just about a bar. It's not just about somewhere to entertain the board. Yeah. That's the least of my problems. It's about having a facility where our education, our academy can use it. It's about the people of Winklebury can use that facility. It's also about utilising a facility that overlooks an AstroTurf pitch so the parents come, bring their children, don't have to go home, have a coffee, have a sandwich and watch the game. It's a revenue stream, a vital revenue stream that can only be obtained by him putting money up front. You won't get your planning permission unless we get a like-for-like replacement. Stop stalling and put some money up front.
Into a town, we were speaking beforehand, that is the biggest town, I think you're right, the biggest town in England without a football league club. So the potential for the club to go on is massive. Yeah.
Yeah, it certainly is. And there is a real goodwill feeling and has been for a year. And, you know, we took over the running the club about 6 weeks ago. But that's diminishing. You can feel it diminishing. Yeah. We need to move into Winglebury, not with a temporary portal cabin that can then be, oh, well, that was all right before. Why can't it be used now? The grading spec is very grey on clubhouses. It just says you have to provide facilities for the officials and yeah. And everybody else. We want a community club that can be a revenue stream, our only revenue stream, and allow us to pay for the use of the pitch, which we have to hire off of Hampshire FA. And by the way, both Hampshire FA and Basingstoke and Dean Council have been fantastic to the community club.
It's an interesting point on the ground grading, because we often, you know, we're often critical of clubs that are putting their money into a budget for playing rather than getting the ground grading thing. And we focus on how many turnstiles you've got, how many seats you've got in the press box, how big your dugout is. But actually, it's that clubhouse bit where you say it's the grey area in there, and it's a bit wishy-washy.
Yeah.
That's where the lifeblood of non-league is, and the lifeblood of communities, particularly with pubs closing left, right and centre, it should be the hub of your football club, and it should be the hub of your local community. And maybe the FA need to look more as that being a priority rather than a ground like this where we need 1,900 people to come in. Short of going on a massive FA Cup run this season, I can't ever see a need of getting 1,900 people.
That is such a relevant point. We're struggling now to get 1,950 is, and which you think, when are we going to get 1,950? Yeah. People that need to sit, by the way. Yes, we need the facilities for disabled people. Of course we need that stuff. Of course we need some seats. Of course we need 1,950 seats, and yet the planning says you just got to provide a bar and facilities for the officials and the directors. It is ridiculous, but obviously, hopefully they'll look into that.
Just last one for me. I've just looked at the league table and you know, whilst Christmas isn't around the corner, but how do you get out of that?
Well, Martin had brought together some talented young kids that had never met each other before. The average age is about 18.
Yeah.
And they were getting better under Martin, and they will get better under Dan as well. And I think we'll pick up. We're also looking at the use of loans.
Yeah.
I'm not a massive lover of loans if you're trying to build a club spirit, but the position we're in, you know, I'd like to thank Wimbledon for kindly loaning two of their best boys and Forest Green for loaning one of their best boys. So I do think we'll pick up. And one of the keys with that is the support that has remained by our supporters. So the backing they give, and they got cheered off when they drew 0-0. So that says a lot.
I remember going there as a manager, always enjoyed it. It was always the feel it was a big ground with a big support vocal, you know, and I think that's why it's so sad, you know, and I know you well, but just the club Basingstoke, anybody that's been there as an opposing manager would feel the same way. It's just one of them places, you know, and you know, we end up with people in football that we don't always want, but surely it's time for someone to just go, well, there you go, let's move this forward, you know.
No, I hope you're right, David.
We move on, but our next guest is no stranger to the FA Trophy, having taken his side as close as possible to winning it at Wembley in May 2018, losing 5-4 on penalties after extra time. They say things like that build you as a character, and character is certainly what our next guest team have shown this season. Currently sitting top of the National League, 6 points clear and already 13 games gone. Welcome back to the Non-League Football Show. Neil Smith, manager at Bromley FC.
Hello there. All cool?
We're cool. That's a very cool reply from someone that's at the top of the National League and, flying at the moment. It's not a bad start.
No, and that's the thing. You know, we're just taking it, you know, how it is. It's fantastic to be there, but we know you know, we'd rather it be the end of the season when you're up there. It doesn't mean anything other than the fact that the boys are getting rewarded for their hard work that they've been doing since pre-season. But there's a massive load of games coming up, and you know, some massive games that we've got, you know, starting with Yeovil on Saturday. So we're not jumping too far ahead. You know, we are where we are, and it's fantastic. But you know, we know everybody's coming for us now.
Yeah, you're talking like a true manager there. But there's only 46 league games in total, and you're already a quarter of the way through. I was looking, you know, last season, you've already got 29 points secured. Maidstone went down on 34 last season. 52 was safety for Boreham Wood. Is that the way you're already looking at it? That you're nearly there. Yeah. So that's the season.
I think like most clubs, you have targets to hit. You know, that you give yourselves at the beginning of the season, and the first one is that 50 point mark. You know, and what you say to them is get that as soon as you can, as early as you can, and then you can relax and you go and, you know, wherever you are, go and, you know, put a run together or go and enjoy yourself, knowing the fact that you've got enough points that you're going to see you there at least next season. So, you know, that's still our first port of call. It's unbelievable where we are and what the, you know, the points that we've accumulated so early on. But like I've said, it's been tough to get those points, and we know to get any other, you know, get the more ones, that, you know, it's going to be even harder because, as I say, you know, when you're at the top, people are coming for you.
And to be fair, Neil, I actually wrote down before you said that you're now being hunted, because you're absolutely right. How does that change psychologically in your head as a manager, and when you're going to the players and the team talks and how you set up? Do you change what you're doing? You know, do you understand what I mean?
It hasn't. You know, we've taken, you know, every game as it comes. You know, it's just the one game. We don't look too far ahead. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, there was a bit of, you know, talk about us because of the signings that we've made early in the season anyway. So we do, that people wanted to make a point of trying to beat us. You know, it goes so many games unbeaten as well. You know, that just adds spice to it. But you hope the boys stand up for themselves. I'd rather be in that situation, the bottom of the table, trying to fight for points, just to try and grab into get out of the relegation zone. So to be where we are is brilliant, and I want the boys to enjoy the moment, but knowing that it's only going to get harder.
Yeah, it is. Listen, and I don't want the nonsense answer here, because if you give me the nonsense answer, we're going to pull you up on it, okay? So what, realistically, before you started the season, did you have a target within your staff?
Yeah, no, and the players, we told the players, you know, we had 60 points last season. Our best points total was 70, I think, and we always wanted to get better than that. So if you're on the 70-point mark, you wanted to be in and around the playoffs. And I generally believe with the players that we had, that's where we wanted to be.
Has that changed?
No, I still want to be in and around the playoffs. Obviously, you know, we're sitting with the points that we've got, but, you know, the really... So our targets are, point one, get those 50 points, two, being in and around the playoffs. Once you're in and around the playoffs, anything can happen near the end of the season. But to look any further than that, this early on, you know, you know that with your experience, you know, you want the boys just to focus on the here and the now.
So it's 5 years since the club got promoted to the top tier, the champions of National South. Obviously, you intimated about the signings you made over the summer. There's loads of work been going on and off the pitch. Is the club ready then to take on that next step to move into the Football League?
Yeah, ready or not, you take any opportunity to get in that league. You know, once you're there, you find out whether you are or you're not, and you build around it. You know, people said we weren't ready for the Conference National when we got promotion from the South. And it's taken us all these years to get to where we are now to be ready for it. You know, we were... You know, like everybody else, when you first go up, you're part time. Then we went semi part time, whatever that means. then we've got, you know, from two nights a week to two nights and a morning, and you know, and you just add it on until you get to where you are. And obviously, the stand going up, our academy getting bigger. We've got the girls' football, the girls' academy. So as a club, we've grown, and we believe that we're trying to give the facilities to be league standard. We're trying to get the training sessions to be league standard, the players to be league standard. So the dream's there. But like everybody else, you know, there's 24 other or 23 other teams that all want the same. So it is going to be tough, but you just try and give yourself the best opportunity to get there.
Good morning, Neil. It's Terry Brown here.
Good morning, Terry.
How are you?
Thank you. I'm good, thank you.
Yeah, smashing.
Hope you're well.
Yeah, fine, thank you. Just an observation, because I've been to Bromley. and looked at the infrastructure there and seen the massive, colossal amount of work you've done, especially like you said, the academy and boys football and girls football. And I think that's something us at Basingstoke are looking to emulate. We're actually looking at your clubhouse. We're looking at your revenue streams. And the academy has to be built in the right way that you are. It is a graduation for the kids. They do see light at the end of the tunnel coming into your first team.
Absolutely.
And it is, and I do appreciate the level I'm at now, we can quite easily integrate our academy boys into the first team. That must be almost impossible when you're having to win every game now, yeah?
It is, but we, you know, like in our squad at the moment, we've got Billy Krask, who's 18. We've got Ollie Tanner, who's 17, just turned 17. You know, they're in and around the first team. And I'm sitting here now, and you've got the first team training alongside our 23s, which are literally our academy. So look, back in the day when I was playing, if the first team players or first team needed players, you go and bring them in. So they train alongside us, and they'll come over. So they get to be in and around the first team environment. They get hungry, or I want them to be hungry to be in there, and nothing's given to them. They've got to earn it. And then our under-17s and under-16s are trained before us. So they train before. So literally, at any given time, there's over 100 players of Bromley, you know, from 16, 17, 18, plus the first team, all training near enough together.
Have you got an AstroTurf facility?
So we've got the 4G pitch that we play on. Yeah. We've got the 4G pitch training ground just at the back of our stadium. So again, if I need numbers, I bring in our players, our academy players.
Yeah, fantastic. So,
that's how it was back in the day. They don't train away from us. Like some of the Premier League, they have a whole training facility away from the first team. I don't want that. I want us all to be together. So my squad isn't the 18 players that I've got signed registered to the first team. My squad are the 24 players that I've got in my academy plus. So I've got a squad of nearly 40 players that I can call upon to do training sessions with.
That's brilliant, Neil. Well done.
And then you hope that there's a pathway. That's our dream. The dream of Bromley Football Club is to have 11 players all being coached through the academy to playing for Bromley Football Club. That's, you know, whether it happens or not is another matter because of the expectation levels and, you know, the will to want to win every game. But they will get the opportunity to be as good as my first team. And if they take that opportunity, then they will play. I don't care how old they are. They're good enough. They'll get my team. Yep. I've had a couple of 17-year-olds as subs. If they're good enough, they will get on.
Yeah, to be fair, I think it's brilliant, Neil, because they see the pathway. You know, if they're in and around you, they actually... And you forgot to mention, you said a couple of 17-year-olds. What you meant to say was a couple of contracted 17-year-olds. Because you're not telling us about anybody that's non-contract at that age. But
So I
think that's brilliant because I remember going back 100 years, the first time you get put into the first team dressing room, it's a scurry place to go. It's you know, you're the new kid on the block. Whereas if you're in and around it, the pathway must be more natural. Now, listen, we're not stupid. If one person a year makes that walk, you've been unbelievable, you know, but at least they all get to see it.
Yeah, no. So that's the whole thing. You know, we've had one come through. We will have others. I've got Jordan Higgs, who was, when I was the academy manager of the team, when he was 15, he's now first team player. He's played over 150 games for Bromley Football Club, after coming through my academy. So we know it works. I need to make sure that there's a pathway for these kids. You know, not everyone's going to make it, but we try and do as well, we try and give them the good habits to take them to another club and do what they need to do there and play football at a decent standard. They're not all going to make it. We know that. But, you know, the percentage, you say, you know, 1 in 100 if you're lucky. But what we try and do, we try and give you enough good habits that you can take it to another team at any level and play decent football and enjoy yourself. There are going to be your special, you know, players that then come through and make it into the first team and maybe progress on further than that. We try and accommodate for everybody, not just the ones that we think are going to make it. Everybody gets the same quality of coaching. I've got Alan Dunn out there now. He's training my 23s and the first team players. I've got Mark Hammond, who's my assistant manager, who he runs the academy as well. So we always know what's coming through. Danny Mills is my 23s manager, but he's also my scout. So what he scouts for players is, if they're not better than what I've got in my academy, they're not good enough. Yeah. I don't just have to bring players in. I might have a player that might not be ready now, but in another year's time, could be ready. So there's no point in bringing in the player in that position, because I'll have a player coming through. So there's a structure to our you know, academy as well, where if you're good enough, you will be given the chance. Then it's down to the player.
And to be fair, I haven't spoken to Terry this morning about this, but I remember speaking to Terry years ago about, we always felt that for a non-league manager to become a league manager, he had to take the team that he was with into the league, which, to be fair, Terry did. Is that how you feel as well?
I do, yeah. I think once you're on that sort of, they say the merry-go-round, you get on the non-league merry-go-round, and you stay at this level because people are afraid to give you a chance. But I don't think this is non-league level anymore. I think, you know, the conference is full-time.
Yeah, it is.
You've got full-time players. You've got full-time academies. You've got league players coming down, and, you know, we've got Josh Rees from Gillingham playing League One. We've got, you know, Billy Bingham from League One, and so I pick their brains. They go, what was training like? What was it? And we're not doing anything different. And sometimes you actually get the response of, well, this is better here. Yeah. You know, we get this. Whether they're blowing smoke up your backside, I don't know. But at the same time,
what you do.
No, exactly. I'll always take it. But what I'm saying is, I ask these league players, you know, what will you do in your league club? Because I want to replicate that. But what I've done, in my experience of being a league player, what got me that chance, I think sometimes the old school's the new school. I think we've gone away from, you know, can't do this, you can't do that because the players are this. No, I want to see what their psyche is as a player. Are they willing to, you know, do a heel run? Because they might give it up before they've even done the run, going, oh, cool, I'm not doing that. Then you see that player on a Tuesday night, when you want that player and it's a windy day and the pitches are rubbish, already being defeated because, oh, I can't play on this. I need to know the psyche of the player before I even put him on the pitch. And I still believe it. I think, you know, you bring on the, you know, you want to be as good as Pep and you want to be as good as Klopp, but at the same time, I've got to know my level and I've got to know what I need from the player. Sometimes it's the psychological side.
Do you know what? We were talking about this. I'm not, believe me, I'm not trying to blow smoke up your backside when I tell you this.
Oh, you can.
But me and Brownie were talking about this very, nearly word for word, weren't we? About how, all right, we're dinosaurs, but there is, you know, and hopefully one day my wardrobe will even come back into fashion, but it is a new thing.
I'm around with that.
But the one thing I wanted to ask you, which is the last one for me, because I know we're running out of time, is you've been a bit like me in as much as you've been an assistant in places as well.
Yeah.
And I always felt that was important because you get to see how other people work and you steal and learn off them. So that would go alongside pulling your senior players from league clubs and saying, look, what else do you do? And what? So you'd never be scared of that, would you?
No, I wouldn't be scared of anything. You know, I believe in what we're doing. I believe we're doing it right. I believe we could take this into the league. I think I could be competitive with what we do in the league with any club. You know, I want to take Bromley into the league, and I think if we took them up, I know what I'd need to do to stay in the league and then get promotion again. I pick people's brains. I want to talk to people. What do you do? How do you do it? You know, you can never know enough. And being an assistant manager, you know, you'd see how that manager's doing stuff. Of course you would. But I genuinely believe in what we're doing as a foundation, we could take anywhere. And we want to take this club into the league, and I think we could be competitive. I think most clubs that sort of go up now, because they do it in the financial way that's not, you know, throwing themselves under the bus a little bit, they're prepared for everything. You know, I only work within my means. I don't go over budget. I wouldn't spend someone else's money. I spend it like it's my own. So I'm very cautious in what I do. I have to be very, very prudent in that as well and make sure that, you know, we work within our means, because you don't want to have a Bolton or a Bury situation here. Mm-hmm. And I also think if you take that into the league, you might be able to restructure things and put it on a financial footing where you're still competitive, you can still win games, but you haven't got to spend a hell of a lot of money to do it all the time. You want the best players, of course you do. But if they want the money more than they want to play for you, they're not the right player. You want a player to come to you because they want to come to you. The financial side is then, for me, they're cherry on the top. You've got to earn it. I think you're going to get it before you earn it. And that's what we've got at this club. We've got a mentality of, if you're doing well, you'll get your rewards. Don't come here expecting the rewards before you even put in the hard work. And I think that's the sort of mindset the players that I've got at the moment have got.
Well, it certainly sounds like you've got the bits of the jigsaw all lined up and ready. As I said, you're top of the table, ready to be shot down. A trip to Aldershot at the weekend.
Yeovil Saturday.
I was going to say about that. Darren Sahl he's come in there. He's got the Aldershot experience, so it's interesting.
Well, obviously he was at Stevenage. He knows the league. So he knows how competitive that division is. He's got the players that he believes not only can obviously do well for Yeovil in this division, but can do it in the next division. So again, I know Darrell. I've spoken to him obviously when I was looking at players that were at Stevenage. I've obviously watched Stevenage, so I'd imagine he's brought a similar sort of mindset into Yeovil. They're obviously six games winning on the spin. We're away from home; it is difficult. They're the form team. So it's got the makings of being a really good game, but what it gives me as a manager, it gives me the chance to pick myself up against a manager that's managed in the league, and then likewise the players. So it's all fit for a really good game. We know it's going to be difficult, like every game is, and these will probably be one of the top sides in this division this year.
Well, best of luck with it at the weekend, and best of luck for the rest of the season. I'm sure we'll speak before the season's out, and look after yourself.
Yeah, cheers.
Yeah, no worries.
Thanks, Neil.
Cheers, guys. Thanks a lot. Wish you all the best.
I have to tell you, we're going to keep this recording because I'm going to tell the story that you just we were talking about before Neil came on. Tarry was saying to me, "Have you been to Bromley lately? Because it's unbelievable what they've done there." And I said, "I haven't been back to Bromley since the night I lost with AFC Wimbledon in the playoff." And he says, "Yeah, I was there that night filling out my application." So I thought the listeners would enjoy that one.
I deny it vehemently.
Anyway.
So this week is a bit of a manager love fest. There was only one choice for our next guest then. A former professional footballer turned professional boxer who won the British light welterweight title and is now back in football management again and doing very well. Tadcaster Albion are currently second in the Northern Premier Northwest Division, and the man guiding them there is old friend of the show, and it's welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, Curtis Woodhouse.
Hi, how are you? Okay.
We're very good, and it appears you're very good up there as well. A mishmash of the number of games played in your division at the moment, but you're second with 16 points from 7 games, 4 points behind Workington, and they played 10. So you must be happy with this start so far.
Yeah, we really have had a great start. When I walked through the door at Tadcaster, the club had was in a bit of a financial mess. The budget had been slashed dramatically, and we only had 2 players left. So it was kind of like, oh my God, we're in a little bit of a crisis, really. But we recruited really well. Sometimes when you haven't got the finances that you used to have, you have to look elsewhere. And we've had to really delve into the youth system that Tadcaster have got, which is fantastic. We had 7 teenagers in our squad on Saturday. So we're going really young. We've got really energetic players, lads really keen to learn. And you know what it's like, once you get a group of young lads and they start doing well, they've got no fear and we're just bouncing from game to game, picking up results. And yeah, I couldn't be any happier, really. The remit when I first got the job was to try and keep us in the league. So to be sat second is testament to the lads of how well they've done, really. And, you know, hopefully we can keep it up and who knows where we can finish.
And Curtis, you know, I've got to tell the viewers this as well. I know we've just spoke off air, but just for the viewers, we get a brief on obviously who we're speaking to, and Tim, because of you ripping me to pieces about 5 or 6 years ago, has listed every club you've played for, your whole career. I've got in front of me, so I will not be asking you why you think you've got the experience to manage. So, but moving on, I agree with when you get a young set of players. What I've wrote down here is they buy into it when it starts to go right. They buy into it more than experienced players who are a little bit more cynical with all that stuff. But with that, I've always found you also need a couple of experienced heads with it. Do you have that?
Yeah, we have. You know, we've got our goalkeeper, who's our captain, Michael Ingram, who's, you know, been a pro at Sunderland. You know, he's won the FA Trophy with York City. You know, I think he's 39 now, isn't he? So he's our goalkeeper, and the best keeper in the league by a mile, to be honest. And we've got a really good partnership at centre-half. We've got Milne and Johan Evans. Johan's only young, but very, very experienced, played a lot of games in the Conference North. It's really in the wide areas where we've got youth and pace, which I think is definitely vital. The spine of our team is quite experienced, even though some of them are young. Like, we've got Alex Wilds, I think 21 years old, but again, played a lot of games for a young lad. And so, yeah, we have got experience in the right areas. But like I said, out wide, we're young, we're naive, we're pacey, we're energetic. And what I found about the young lads in today's football is they demand a lot higher standards from myself. You know, they want information. You know, they want to learn. And when I was coming through as a young player, it wasn't really like that. You were kind of told what to do, and that was that. There's not really much feedback one way or the other. But these young lads, after every game, they want a brief of how they've played, what they can do better. I'm like, bloody hell, lads, I'm not getting paid enough for all this. But it's great. They keep you on your toes, and it's really, I think it takes them to the next level. And every game, they're improving and improving. And I think as a manager, you have to be fully aware that they're going to make mistakes, and you've just got to not leave them to it, but they've got to learn. I mean, we went to Ashton in the FA Cup in the replay. We got beat 4-2 and just made mistake after mistake. You know, we were too gung-ho. You know, young players just wanting to probably do too much, and we got hit on the counter-attack a few times, and it cost us. But since then, we've won 3 in a row, so we've adapted, changed things, and they've bounced back. So I'm really, really proud of them. I've loved every minute of working with them. It's really rejuvenated myself, really, and I think I've become a better manager for it.
Curtis, it's Terry Brown here. Could I ask you how much crossover there is between the experience you have as a professional boxer and the training and the fitness levels? Is there a crossover there with the football side? Can you incorporate some of that training into the football?
Yeah, I think you definitely can. I think the main thing that I try and instill from my boxing is, I mean, I don't know how much you know about my professional football career, but
I've got it all in front of me.
but when it comes to ill discipline and underachievement, I've got to be right up there. You know, I didn't dedicate myself to the game at all, and I probably, looking back at my own career, I had everything too early, really. You know, I was earning big money as a teenager and really took my eye off the ball, and it really affected me. And one thing I took into my boxing career was, I thought, right, I've wasted one career through lack of effort. I'm not going to do it again. And, you know, I really dedicated myself to professional boxing. I started off at 188th in Great Britain out of 188. So I was literally the worst fighter in Great Britain. And after 10 years, I ended up at number one. And that was basically through sacrifice, dedication. You know, when everybody else went home, I stayed behind for an hour, 2 hours, and practiced and practiced and practiced. And that's just one thing that I try and install in my teams is, listen, there is no shortcuts to success. Because I know, because every shortcut going, I've attempted it probably 3 or 4 times, and it doesn't get you anywhere. So I try and install that discipline within my team. And, yeah, I know how to get fit, and I know how to get the lads fit. And one thing that's really stood out for me this season is how relentless, you know, we are without the ball, the pressing. And, yes, we are fit, and I think we've definitely installed that as a coaching team. But I think most players can do that. They either choose to or they choose not to. And I think the installing the mentality within the squad, I think that's what we've done. And I've got that from boxing, most definitely. You need to be mentally rock solid to be standing half a metre away from someone who's trained for 8 weeks to try and take your head off. You know, you have to be mentally rock solid to be able to do that. And I've tried to install that within my squad, definitely.
I think the big word, excuse me, Curtis, the big word that me and Terry picked up on there was sacrifice. That, you know, that tells you 90% of what you need to know, and it's easy. Listen, I can't even spell it, you know, but it's massive, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And you know what, like I said about the young lads coming through now, I think they sacrificed a hell of a lot more than what my generation did. You know, we used to finish training at 12:30, and I used to be in the bookies for the first race. You know what I mean? That was how it worked back in the day. But these lads are different. They're all in the gym now. They're all on gym programs. I think a lot of them at non-league now are desperate to get into professional game, and you know they will listen more. And I always explain to the young lads, we've got a few really young, bright, talented kids, and can't believe they've not been picked up by an academy along the way, or they're not in the pro game. And you know, you've got to sometimes tell them what it takes to be successful. I know it's easy to point at people like Ronaldo and Messi and people like that, but behind the scenes, you look at how Ronaldo's developed his body over the last 15 years, and you can't just take a tablet for that. That's hours and hours of sacrifice away from the cameras, away from the bright lights, you know, and that's what you've got to be willing to do to reach your level. Whatever your level is, you know, you've got to be willing to sacrifice to do it. And that's what I'd really try and drum into the lads is there is no shortcuts. There really isn't. And you know, and the lads have, like I said, bought into it. That's the main thing. And we're just running with it at the minute. And where we'll end up, God only knows. But it's a great feeling to have a group of lads that no matter where if we get beat on a Saturday, it'll never be through lack of effort. We haven't got that DNA at the minute. You know, we're a real honest bunch. And it's a real pleasure to manage them, to be honest.
It was interesting to see the celebrations with the players and yourself and the fans as well. The fans really seem to have taken, and maybe it is that passion that's coming through from the players, that the fans have really got behind the club as well this season.
Yeah, I mean, we got a standing ovation on Tuesday night, which was amazing. And I didn't particularly think we played that well. You know, it wasn't our best performance of the season by any stretch of the imagination. But I think what the fans have realised is the club are not paying great wages. The lads are not here for the money. The lads are here for the opportunity, you know. And I think if you see a group of lads giving absolutely everything, every ounce of themselves, you know, you stand and applaud it. And I think that's the reaction we've got from the fans. They've bought into what's going on at the football club and they've bought into, you know, the lads' work rate and desire. And yeah, it's great. The lads deserve so much credit. But like I said, you can't physically make them sprint. They've got to want to do it. You know, they've got to have that DNA that they're willing to, like I said, sacrifice on the pitch as well. You know, make that run, that lung-busting run when you don't really want to do it, but you might have to do it to block that cross, or you might have to do it to get on the end of that cross, or you might have to do it to make that tackle. You might have to do it to block that one on the line. And, you know, we've got a group of 18 lads that are willing to do that. And like I said, the fans are really appreciating it and getting behind us. It's brilliant.
Yeah, we started talking about the league when you first came on, but obviously FA Trophy this weekend, you got a tough trip to City and Liverpool. And I understand that Taddy have never won in the FA Trophy either. So, you know, a bit of a monkey on your back there. But it sounds like you've got the right DNA in the team to go on a decent cup run. What does the trophy mean to the club this season?
Yeah, I mean, financially, it's huge for us. You know, like the FA Cup was. I was so disappointed that we went out against Ashton in the FA Cup. We drew them 2-2 at home. And how we haven't won the game, I will never know. Even their manager came on and I think he said, you know, even Dick Turpin wore a mask type of thing. Because we absolutely put them to the sword and missed chance after chance after chance. Then the replay got beat 4-2 and they were the better team. They deserved the win. But yeah, so we missed out financially there. But yeah, financially, big for the club. And like I said, we've never won a game in the FA Trophy, which I found a mind-boggling stat, really, when they told me that. So we'll go there. It'll be a tough game. There is no gimmicks in this league. I think every team is very competitive, so it'll be a hard game. But, you know, like I said, with this group, anyone, bring anyone on. We fear absolutely, we respect everybody, but we fear absolutely nobody. So we'll be going there looking for the win.
One last one from me. I won't. We're running short of time, so I won't run through all those clubs that you play for. But I will. You know,
I'm getting them tattooed on my arm, by the way.
You played at every level of the professional game. You played at the top three levels of the non-league game. You were capped at England under 21. You've had a football management career at non-league level, doing well at Taddy this season. You had a boxing career. I think you fought, was it welterweight, light welterweight, lightweight, heavyweight? Yeah, English titles, British titles. You're not even 40 till next year. What else is on the list?
And I've wrote an autobiography, forgot about that, available in all good bookstores.
Well, get it. What's it called?
It's called Box to Box.
There you go. Box to Box, I like it.
Yeah. So yeah, I have crammed a lot in, but I definitely feel that I'm at the. I think everybody matures at different rates, really. Yeah. I think pushing 40 now, I kind of feel like I am. I know a little bit what life's about now. I spent a lot of time in the wilderness not having a clue what the hell was going on as a young kid. Drifted around financially, you know, had loads of money, didn't know what to do with it, really struggled with the pressures of being a young kid off a council estate with a pocket full of money. I really, really struggled with that. And, you know, I know not many, too many people are going to feel sorry for me, but it was a real difficult part of my life. And now I feel finally that I actually know what life's about a little bit. You know, I've got a lovely family, a beautiful wife, and really settled down, and I feel comfortable now. And I feel like the time for me to become a successful football manager is now, because I've got my own house in order, and I have that for a good few years now. And boxing certainly helps me with that. You know, I always said before I was 26 years old, I'd been arrested 14 times. And at 26 years old, I walked into a boxing gym, and I've not had a parking ticket since that. So, you know, boxing has completely turned my life around, and I'm really grateful for that. And I really feel that the next 30 years, you know, I believe I'm going to prove myself to be a very, very good football manager because of the life lessons I've learned along the way. I believe that I'm good with people. I've realised I've got my own gym now, boxing gym, and I've realised my calling is actually working with people. I didn't realise that a few years ago, but now it's what I love doing. I love developing and helping people and improving them, and that lends nicely to the job I'm doing now in football management. And I am very, very ambitious. I want to manage as high as I possibly can, but at the minute I'm absolutely loving life at Tadcaster.
And doing very well at it as well, yeah. and at life as well, by the sounds of things. Curtis, always a pleasure to have you on the Non-League Football Show.
He'll always be welcome on this show. There's not too many people put me in my place, but fair play to him.
I appreciate your time, guys. Thank you very much.
No, brilliant. While we're still on air, I wish you'd have been. If you'd have been in the studio that night, Brownie, you'd have needed an ambulance to get out. Honestly, he's absolutely nailed me to the wall, which I still find really funny because he's just reeled it off. Anyway, we've got to dig it out sometime.
Trawling the archives, but it's nice that someone that's had those positive and negative experiences is prepared to get involved at non-league.
You hear a lot of sort of statements like that from boxers how boxing turned their life. I was never tough enough to go into a boxing gym, believe me, but how it turned their life. I've heard that from numerous boxers, you know, not all with Curtis's talent to play football, but it is, I think it's somewhere where kids who, if they can't find their way, it's a good place to walk into.
And you always hear it alongside the word discipline.
Yeah.
And it's a very disciplined sport, and you've got to, those two words really, discipline and sacrifice. Yeah. If you want to be that pro footballer you claim that you want to be, then I suggest you live the life of an athlete up until when you're finished, and then you can enjoy the rewards that brings. But the amount of youngsters that have said to me they really, really want to be a pro and then don't live the lifestyle, you're not going to be a pro, son.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think I used to say to players, would you like to do this or do you really want to do it? Because they're two different things. We'd all, listen, I'd like to get into a size 38 waist, but, you know, will I ever? You know, I doubt it. So I think I think he's absolutely right, Brownie. And you know, if you can take a boxing mindset into football where the sacrifice and the discipline and it, you know, you've got to be at your very, very best, then you'd do all right.
So let's round off the show and head on over to Non-League Paper Towers, and welcome back to the Non-League Show. Editor at large of the Non-League Paper, Mr. Matt Backcott. Welcome back, Matt.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
I'm good. Now, it's another busy week. We've had a busy show. We spoke to Neil Smith at Bromley, Curtis Woodhouse from Tadcaster Albion. We've been talking about National League. And this weekend, there's some big games. Neil Smith taking his Bromley side at top of the table down to Yeovil, but there's also a very competitive sort of playoff zone at the moment on Saturday. You've got Dover against Halifax Town as well, and you still look at that table and there's still clubs around there that maybe wouldn't have been fancied at the start of the season, but they still seem to be picking up results, and it looks like it's going to be a very tasty season in the National League.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's when it gets to this stage, you're saying, well, you know, these are the teams, they're not and not sort of there by complete fluke, are they, after this amount of games? So they've all sort of got something about them, but it's a sort of very, I know it still is early days, but it's a very, very tight table, isn't it? You sort of go right down, and there's clubs sort of 3 points outside the playoff places. But it's big weekend. It sort of feels almost like one of the first sort of big weekends that we've got in many ways, with this sort of the, as it's now sort of shaking out. And you say Bromley and Yeovil, Yeovil absolutely flying, 1-6, Bromley 4 points clear, and sort of one of the teams that we sort of thought maybe would be up there this year, and they're sort of proving that. I spoke to an experienced National League manager a few weeks ago, and he said that he thought Bromley could even win the league. So, you know, they're doing very well under Neil Smith, and it's good to see. And also, you can see everything that's going on around the club, and the crowds that they're getting with the new stand that's open, and all that sort of positivity there. It is it's a really good place to be.
Yeah, and it's interesting you say that. You know, it feels like it is a big weekend, and things are shaking up, because there's been a number of managerial changes again. I mean, we speak about managerial changes every week, but in recent hours, even we've had Wrexham parting ways with Brian Hughes. Nicky Eden's gone at Kettering Town. These are big clubs that had big expectations at the start of the season, but they're in the lower reaches, being kind to them, of their table. And as we've said, there's already quite a few games under their belt, so you can maybe understand why the club have made the changes.
Yeah, I think we sort of said before, we between us on the show, that, you know, we don't like seeing managers put out of jobs, and, you know, it's difficult. I think it's always seems to be around this time of year, particularly after the FA Cup, when teams go out of that, when they were hoping for better runs, that changes are made, and it sort of almost feels like this is the first first point of the season where it sort of is a real swathe of changes in dugouts because of where it is, and clubs are sort of, you know, thinking, well, if we do it now, then we've still got time to get everything back on track. That's the problem, is that everyone else is trying to, you know, win games as well. You're not, you know, just because you change things doesn't mean to say it's going to turn it all around. But I think obviously Brian Hughes going at Wrexham, sort of feel for him, but it kind of isn't hugely surprising just from what sort of the noises that you're seeing around the fans and things like that. Seem to be happy, and Wrexham sort of felt at the beginning of the season that if they could sort of start getting more goals, scoring more goals, and keeping as defensively solid as they were in the last sort of couple of years, and they'd certainly have a chance. But I think one of the problems this year is they've just been conceding too many, and it's sort of another defeat on Tuesday to Fylde was the last sort of hurrah for Brian Hughes, unfortunately.
And just as the dust begins to settle at Billericay, it looks like East Hull are keen to reassume that mantle of the club in the PR spotlight. They've appointed Dean Windass there as manager of the Northern Counties East side.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, a kind of sort of bit of controversy around them. They obviously, the owners previously at North Ferriby, and we sort of saw what happened then. See a club that went off the map because there was, you know, talk of the trying to relocate and being renamed to East Hull, North Ferriby, but sort of was rejected by the authorities. And I believe Dean Windass was sort of occasionally down there last year and on the sideline. So sort of, yeah, dipping into it properly now, it seems. And it'll be interesting to, was one we'll sort of all be keeping an eye on.
Yeah, and talking of headlines, the FA Cup last weekend obviously wasn't for Grays Athletic, who have decided not to appeal against the basically expulsion from the FA Cup for playing a player without the correct international clearance, suggesting that they couldn't afford to appeal it. And it does seem one of those that's very harsh on the facts, that the player deemed not to have that clearance, that played for two other clubs since his brief spell overseas, and it is hard to see what the club could have done else to avoid the issue. So as much as we're talking about it, it's great to have all this money involved in the FA Cup now, and that comes with its own complications, because if there's a strict liability offence like this, and the club is being run by volunteers and they're doing all they can and they can't avoid this, but they lose out on that money, that someone needs to look at the
at all the administration. I don't know, the FA constantly looking at administration tools and that sort of thing, but it needs to be done urgently, doesn't it? And something needs to be addressed on this front.
Well, yeah, I think we've seen every year, every season, we're seeing and reporting on these sort of issues. This one sort of maybe slightly even more, but you need, like you say, because he's allowed to play for other clubs. Why does this keep happening? And after a while, you've got to think, well, okay, there's obviously an issue here. It's not just clubs being, you know, not you know, just like the odd mistake here and there, is it? It's and as you say, volunteer secretaries, we've got more, even more pressures, and it does need to be looked at. I'm sure the FA are looking at it because, you know, they don't want to see their competition with clubs falling out of it. They don't want to see, you know, leagues with points deductions. You know, a couple of years ago we have, you know, an asterisk at the bottom for a points deduction on the bottom of our tables, and I think we're going down for all these different symbols because some of these are three or four where clubs are getting deducted points for some sort of issue, and it does not show the game in a good light at all, in my opinion. You know, when you're seeing points deductions and clubs thrown out of the FA Cup and for the you know, breaches of these rules. I mean, we had a piece in last week's NLP written by Andy Simpson. He spoke to Paul Lawler, the chairman of the Northwest Counties League. He's saying that the rules around players moving between different countries need to be simplified to relieve the pressure on the administrators. And, you know, I think it is something that after a while you say, right, this really does need to be addressed now, because it's not good all around. Like you say, when there's money involved as well, you know, money that is can have a real big benefit for clubs. It's not just, you're not just losing out a couple of points or you know, a game sort of thing, a home game. You're losing out on all that other things as well when it's in the FA Cup. So yeah, it does. It's a bit of a minefield, isn't it? And you sort of really do feel for secretaries who are clubs who are under a lot of pressure and having to spin plates and everything that comes with, you know, their day jobs as well. And, you know, we need to be making it as easy as possible. And I think a lot of it is that these things aren't, you know, whether it's a big database or whatever, that's obviously not going to be cheap to produce, and it needs to be almost foolproof. But, you know, then it's come a time now where it's got to be looked into, I'd say.
Yeah, it's not wanting to be a FA bashing, because they do, as you said, they do a lot of hard work, and they are addressing lots of things. But you then also had the third qualifying round draw, and it's moved from the north-south split. But because of the way the clubs were split, you see ties like Gloucester City, they're having to go up to Whitby Town in the next round, which is a 480-mile round trip. Yet in the last draw, they were the southern-based regionalised thing, so that they had a local title. And I know it's a national competition, you're moving further on, but it almost negates the wonderful prize money that's being put into the competition when clubs are having to absorb these long journey costs and other expenses that go with it.
Yeah, I mean, Gloucester have done some miles in recent years, haven't they? We've been there in the National League North, obviously, as well. And yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? I think you've got to draw the line somewhere, and I guess it's where's that? And, you know, all sort of shifts depending on who gets through and things like that. And I think sort of, you know, we've obviously seen the restructuring that's going on that's trying to alleviate these sort of problems, but unfortunately there's always going to be these kind of ties that get thrown up. And I guess from Gloucester's point of view, if they can go up there and get a win, then it'll all be worthwhile, won't it? But it's, you know, won't be an easy task, that's for sure. And the FA Cup's about dreaming and enjoying it and all that sort of thing. And hopefully they can maybe sort of look at that side and think, well, if we can get through, maybe we can get a nice big home draw.
Well, that's it. Yeah, if you win the game, then everything's forgotten again, isn't it? But if not, then there's always going to be a few gripes and complaints. So we should of course mention non-league day again, you know, fast approaching, coming up on October the 12th, and hopefully clubs have got their own plans in place. But if there are any floating non-league fans looking for a game to go to, there is of course a great tool at the non-league day website, nonleagueday.co.uk/map. HTML, I think, and that'll help you find a local game with events. And I guess the non-league paper are going to be giving plenty of coverage to non-league day as it's fast approaching.
Yeah, obviously, your good self penned a column for us last week about non-league day and the importance of clubs and helping out your local club and getting down there. And hopefully, that's what non-league day will continue to do. I think it's such a, as you said, it's such almost a simple idea, isn't it? But it's such a great one, and that's why it's such a good idea now. It's become this real established part of the calendar every year. We'll be giving it, lots of coverage and flagging up as if clubs have got things going on. They want to sort of flag it up, then please drop us a line. We'd be really pleased to hear from you. And it's a real celebration and a day we can all look forward to. And it's trying to get these sort of new people in and showing them what the game is all about. And it will be another cracking weekend. And like I say, fast approaching. I can't believe it's come around already.
Yeah, well, I guess you've got other things to fill the paper with this week. What else can we expect to read about on Sunday?
Yeah, it's got lots going on. The FA Trophy starts this week, so we've got some coverage of that. Some of the reaction to the FA Cup replays in midweek and the draw. Some great ties with Bristol Manor Farm. We've got Wilson, and then some really interesting games to look forward to in that competition. So plenty of coverage on that. So then there's the sort of unfortunate incident we saw last weekend with the racism, alleged racism incident up at Hartlepool, where Dover players were racially abused. And I think Hartlepool probably deserve quite a bit of credit for the way they've sort of reacted to that. They've sort of really been proactive and sort of had posters at the games the other night and at their front page of their programme. And players, Gus Mafutu, who spoke very eloquently about how it made him feel. We spoke to Inie Effiong at Dover, who was the sort of original target of the racist abuse. But it just seems incredible, really, that we're in 2019 and we're still talking about this. It's not the only incident in the last sort of week in non-league, and I think it's another thing that really needs to be addressed. We can't keep sort of brushing it aside and saying, oh, it's a one-off and blah, 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 because this keeps happening, and it's not right that the players with the colour of their skin are abused on the pitch. And it needs to be, it's a real sort of issue in society generally. Football needs to do its bit to stamp this out, because it's sort of getting a bit boring reporting on it all the time, because, it's like I say, 2019, and how is this still going on? And one of the things that sort of annoys me as much as anything is you see people say, it's wrong that he was racially abused, but he was celebrating in front of us. I mean, well, actually, no. There's no reason. Just because someone's celebrating in front of you, you probably begin to stick to all game anyway. Comes and celebrates a goal in front of you, it does not give you any sort of right or justification to racially abuse him. And it's got to stop.
And I think you're right in the praise for Hartlepool, because it was a very public display of support for the Dover players, and making sure that it will be stamped out. And so often at our level, but also higher up in the game, it does just sort of get ignored by the directors and by the chairman. But the club were adamant that they were against this and that they wanted to speak out against it, rather than just saying, well, I'm not really sure, I didn't see the incident or those sort of things. It was a positive action. And I think that's the only way that we can stamp this out, is just show that everybody is united against racism and make sure that the people that still seem to think that it should be part of their repertoire are just shamed and pushed away from the game and pushed away from society as well, and hopefully make a difference to their thought processes.
Yeah, 100%. I think you say sometimes you see clubs, and I can understand why they've all shut it down. And let's not talk about this. Because Hartlepool haven't done that. They've because their own players were sort of caught up in it as well, and were you know, upset by what they heard, and you know, they've to put a piece in the programme of one of your players talking about it and everything that came with it. Obviously, Jeff Stelling has been on Twitter speaking out about it, and it really is the, you know, we can't sort of keep saying, as I said earlier, oh, this is just a one-off incident, oh, it's just one idiot in the ground sort of thing. You know, this it keeps happening time and time again. I've never been racially abused. I'm, you know, I don't know what it feels like. I mean, it's sort of, it for me, it feels very difficult to, you know, I don't want to come across sort of thinking, oh yeah, this is the answer to things, because I don't know what it feels like. So that's why we need to listen to the people who have sort of speak with authority on this subject and do what they and implement what they think. And the sanctions on these people have got to be really, really heavy. The people or person who was racially abusing Iniesta Young and Ricky Modeste and the other Dover players and the Hartlepool players on Saturday should never watch a game of football ever again at any level. It shouldn't be, you know, it should be criminal convictions. So that it's difficult for him to get a new job and things like that. And that's something that's Inny has spoken about with us this week. You know, he just thinks that, you know, it needs to be there needs to be real deterrence and real sanctions handed down. We see it with UEFA, don't we, where it's kind of like, or, you know, sort of token fines, and then if someone does something else that sort of see, we think it's less serious, you know, the fines can be massive. You know, we need to, are we taking it seriously or not, is kind of the way it leaves me feeling. And I think it just, you know, we can't just keep ignoring it and thinking it will go away, but because it clearly isn't. It's getting, for my mind, I don't know whether it's because things are getting reported better or it's social media or what it is, but I feel like there are more incidents now than there have been before, and when I've been at the paper for the last 10 years.
Mm. And it's you know, sometimes we've spoken about where there was a spate of violence where it was being taken out of the professional game, and we found it creeping in amongst fans in non-league game. And non-league needs to get together and make sure that these people don't impose themselves on the game that we love.
Yeah, 100%. If you see someone on, I know it might not be easy on the terraces if someone is there, you know, is next to you and shouting and all that sort of thing. But there are, through Kick Out, there's a report app. I think Hartlepool have been pushing that. It needs to be reported. We can't just turn oh, that's just banter, or I'm not getting involved in that and I'm not doing me. You know, we need to, like you say, come together, unite and sort of stamp this out and make it a better place to be. You know, better environments to be watching football. Because there would have been kids around where those people were shouting on Saturday, 100%. Mm. You know, it's ridiculous.
Well, Matt, hopefully we won't be reporting similar scenes this weekend, and there will be some more positive stories. Thanks again for joining us on the Non-League Football Show, and we'll speak to you soon.
Thanks, Tim. Always enjoy speaking to you. Thanks a lot.
So that's it for this week. A big thank you to Dave Anderson for joining me.
Pleasure.
And also to Terry Brown.
Thanks very much.
Lovely to see Mr. Brown, actually.
It really was. Yeah, we've made him green with envy hearing what other clubs have got available to him. But I'm sure in a few months' time, you know, hopefully the shouts out there will get a few more people. And as I said, there's lots of positives at Basingstoke. Community club run, FA Trophy run on its way at the weekend. So who knows? A big thank you to all of our guests as well, and a big thank you to everybody for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. Dave Anderson is at DaveAnderson78, Caroline Barker at Caroline Barker, and myself at Tim Fuel. Plus, of course, you can find us every week on Audio Boom, on iTunes, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, via your smart speakers, and also all good podcast aggregation sites. Thank you and goodbye.
Jabber Production. JIBBA JABBA.